My 85 show covers them all. This is Around the NHL on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the program. Steinberg and Kerr along with you. Coming up at the top of the hour, headlines. And, of course, 6 o'clock, we will take you to Boston and the TD Garden for Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. It's been outstanding.
What a series.
Let's get right into it as we kick off Around the NHL.
The Boston Bruins, the Chicago Blackhawks.
It was cool being in Chicago for the first two games of this series. Unfortunately, did not get an opportunity to get into the United Center.
The bank would have really had to be broke.
It's cool, and so is Boston, I've heard.
Oh, yeah,
really. You've been to all these places. Yeah. I'd been to Chicago before, but never while the Hawks were playing. And, yeah, it is a hockey town. Like, everybody, all walks of life, they're all... And, yeah, are they the Bulls? Are they the Bears? Are they...
No.
They're not. But they still love their Blackhawks. And everybody, you know, whether it be... Because, look, there are a lot of friendly homeless people in Chicago. There are a lot of friendly people who, that unfortunately, just for whatever reason, they have to be on the street asking for change. And you feel really bad because they're all so nice. And every single one of them, go Hawks. And it was cool. I've got a Jonathan Taves jersey, so I was able to wear it while I was in Chicago and be a pretend Blackhawks fan for a couple of days.
Oh, you're incognito.
I was incognito. Hey, okay. I've got a Taves jersey. I'm gonna pretend like I'm a local. And everybody's like, go Hawks. It is a cool town.
Walking up and down Michigan Avenue on game day, like downtown, I'm sure you saw Bruins jerseys. I'm sure you saw lots of Hawks jerseys. It was fun because every time we go there, there's always a couple of Calgary Flames jerseys, you know, walking up and down Michigan Avenue. That's what you do. I've been there on a Saturday during the fall when college football's on, and Auburn was in town to take on Northwestern.
Yeah.
Yes, Northeastern would have been a completely different. That would have been
an odd spot for us. An odd spot.
That would have been a bowl game. But they walk. I mean, it is. It's so much fun. And inside that building, it's electric. I've said it on and on and on and on. If you have a hockey bucket list, you have to go to Chicago just for the national anthem. And it has not disappointed.
The cool thing, and we'll get into the series in just a second, but went to local pubs for both games to watch. And in the pubs, they did the same thing. Like, everybody was clapping and cheering during the national anthem, even though they weren't at the United Center. Same thing happens. Cool town, and it was cool to be there for games one and games two. They had this big Blackhawks banner right on the Chicago River. Yeah. And so my hotel was Hotel 71. It's right across the street from the Trump Tower. Mm-hmm. And right beside my hotel is kind of a gross-looking building. It's older. It's probably about 60 stories, though, which doesn't make a dent in the Chicago skyline. But what they do is all their windows face the river and face the bar district, and so they light up different windows with Go Hawks, and it's actually kind of cool.
Boston will be will be that way, if not a little bit more even. It's a great downtown. It's a great arena area. It's going to be humming, and it's a lot of fun. The series has not disappointed.
So let's get into the series itself, because a lot of people are talking about Game 3. It's been Boston's game so far in the postseason. They have yet to lose a Game 3, and the Blackhawks have yet to win a Game 3 in the postseason. Here's head coach Claude Julien.
Stats at this time of year don't mean a thing. So no matter what we are and no matter what they are and so on, it's about winning this game tonight. So I don't pay much attention to stats, Walsh, when it comes to that stuff. We've seen that those things change. It just takes one game to change the stat. So I'm going to focus on what we need to do tonight.
It's a fun stat, but in the end, it really doesn't mean a whole lot. The Bruins have they've impressed so far, and I'm not surprised. I chose them to win in six, and they're a team to me that has just kind of gone out, and aside from some slow starts, they've kind of played the hockey that they are pretty happy to play.
I love this series. I'm glad I'm not working this series, because I don't have to make prognostications. I don't have to come up with stories every day. Mm-hmm. It's funny to me, you know, the Hawks win the first one, and there's these stories about, is Boston vulnerable? What about this? What about that? Now, the Hawks lose one. Pollock's coming out, Stahlberg's in. It's that ebb and flow. You know what? This is just a great series. The one thing that I am convinced of, the difference between the two teams, is you can beat Corey Crawford. Maybe you haven't so far. Well, I guess the game overtime winner is. You can beat Corey Crawford from out far. I think you can beat Corey Crawford with a shot, a long shot. I don't think you can beat Tuukka Rask with a long shot. I think where the Hawks have had success is by crashing and banging the net. I think The other thing that I find very, you know, and you had coach talking about stats. There was no team took made less hits, recorded hits this year than the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah. And they have been out hit in this series, but they have not been physically dominated in this series. This has been a great series. This has been fantastic.
The most lopsided period was the first period of Game 2, where the Hawks put 19 shots on Tuukka Rask, but were only able to score the one Patrick Sharp goal. And it seemed like in that period, if you want to say the edge in speed or quickness that Chicago might have, it seemed like maybe it was a little bit more pronounced than it had been at any other time. But Boston did a really good job of kind of getting things back on an even plane, getting things back to the type of hockey they want to play. I thought that was maybe one of the most impressive, if not the most impressive, and certainly the most noticeable adjustment that we've seen so far in this series.
And the other thing I like about this series, Pat, when it goes to overtime, they don't hold back.
No.
Right? Like, they have been taken off, and there have been, you know, now, three overtime periods you're going to drag, and you know, you get tired, it's going to cause problems. But even that last one, like, all right, here we go. It's just been what the sport's supposed to be about. It's been what the game's supposed to be about. And not surprising, here we are in another situation where third and fourth lines become so crucial. Mm-hmm. Now, I think back to 2007 when the Ducks won and how good that Sammy Paulson, Travis Moan, you know, Rob Niedermeyer line was. You know, you look at, you know, when Boston beat Vancouver, and now, and I'm not saying necessarily third line for Andrew Shaw, but Shaw is just taking this playoffs by storm. You look at Kelly, hadn't scored in 24 playoff games or whatever it was. He gets a big goal for Boston.
Paille scores the overtime winner.
Now, that to me is the best part about this, is that it's top to bottom, somebody's impact.
Yeah. Now, the one lineup change is happening on the Chicago side of things. Brandon Boldig, who was kind of victimized on the overtime winner, he was the guy on the sideboards who was unable to chip that puck past and eventually led to the nice pinch and the Daniel Paille overtime winner. He will come out. Victor Stahlberg will come in. That is the one change tonight. Here's head coach Joel Quenneville.
And Victor, you know, we're just looking for more. And I think offensively, defensively, you know, just giving us a little more in those both areas.
All right, looking for a little bit more from Victor Stahlberg.
What a place to be at this time of the year where you can make a lineup change. And that's where I heard you talking earlier about, you know, why was Boldig in, and you said size, and I agree. You know, they put him in there to kind of augment the Lucic's and the Charas, and you know, he's had his moments of yipping and yapping. But now you want to tweak. Now, two games in, I think, Pat, you have a really good feeling for how physical this thing's going to be. Mm-hmm. Stahlberg can bring you a little bit more. I mean, again, that's testament to the depth of the Chicago Blackhawks. On many teams, you know, who'd be this deep or maybe even the last round, Stahlberg would be an everyday guy. So it's nice to be able to have that flexibility and go back there.
Game time tonight is at 6 o'clock. We'll have it for you live right here on Sportsnet 960
feed.
The Fan. The Boston feed.
Yeah.
We've got the Boston feed for the first two. That'll continue.
But it's not Jack Edwards
at home. No, it's not Jack Edwards' television feed. It's Dave Goucher who's doing the radio feed. Still doing a pretty darn good job. That's a 6 o'clock start here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Okay, so that's what's happening with Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final, but two big stories we've got to focus in around the league. Let's start in the Big Apple.
The New York Rangers.
As reports now have confirmed, our John Shannon on his Twitter has put out there that he can confirm the terms that the New York Rangers have come to with their new head coach. I don't think it's a massive surprise. I think that as soon as we heard that the opening was there and Alain Vigneault was no longer the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, him and the New York Rangers just seemed like a natural fit. Mm-hmm. And it kind of has evolved, and it sounds like a 5-year contract for Alain Vigneault as the new head coach of the New York Rangers. Not to be confirmed by the team as of yet, but plenty of our sources at Sportsnet higher up have all confirmed that, 5-year contract now for Alain Vigneault, the head coach of the New York Rangers. Not a lot of matches made in heaven, and maybe that's a little too whimsical to say here, but I think it's a good fit.
I think it is. I think it's, you know, in the case of John Tortorella's exit, I think you want somebody who's going to be a little bit different coming in. I wouldn't say that Vigneault is necessarily a polar opposite. I think he can be a taskmaster when he needs to be, but he can also deal with superstar players. He won't play the same kind of meat and potatoes, blocking shots style that John Tortorella had, so we'll see how that affects the Rangers. He certainly steps out of a kind of a confusing quagmire with goaltenders and
doesn't have any questions anymore.
Clear cut, eh? Can Lundqvist play 82 is the only question. you know, and I asked you before about your visceral first instinct, and to me, I go back to when I heard the Mark Messier, Wayne Gretzky stuff. I just no, don't. You know, and not that I have any vested interest in it, but I just didn't think that was going to end well. Look, Alain Vigneault, say what you will, this whole year was kind of played in Vancouver with the thought that if he couldn't get, if they couldn't get going, he was gone, regardless of what happens. I'm of the opinion from watching from afar that I think Vancouver's problems are far more systemic than just a coach.
Yeah.
You know, so is Vigneault the answer? I don't know. He's a change. I'm more fascinated by the team that he left and who they hire as a coach.
Well, there's that fun narrative out there that says that it's just going to be a straight coaching swap. It's John Tortorella is going to come in and be the new head coach of the Vancouver
Canucks. I would love Tortorella in Vancouver. We love it.
Three times a year.
Love it.
The thing with the reason why I think Alain Vigneault and why my gut says, yeah, that's a good move, my initial reaction. I mean, first of all, I've always really liked him as a coach. I think he's one of the best tacticians we've seen in this era of hockey, post-lockout. The way he runs a bench, the way he's able to get matchups on the fly, he's one of the best tacticians out there. So I've always really respected him as a head coach. But take a look at the two markets he's been a head coach in, and that's why I think this works. I mean, there's always a lot of talk, well, is this guy going to be able to do it in the media hotbed of New York? Well, he's done it in the biggest hotbed in hockey in Montreal, and it's not as if Vancouver, you're playing without a lot of, without any pressure. I mean, especially with the expectations of the Canucks. He's been there. He's faced plenty of scrutiny. He's placed plenty of rumor and innuendo. That's why I think, I mean, the biggest reason anyway, why I think it's pretty darn good fit.
Curious about his staff. Rick Bowness has already signed on in Tampa Bay,
yes.
So he won't get, you know, Rick, I believe it was the associate coach in Vancouver with Alain.
And I've been there since Alain took over.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, back to the Messier thing, would Mark Messier, do you go down that path? Do you bring him in as an assistant and associate coach? That's a pretty powerful person, pretty powerful image to have. I'm wondering if Mark Messier would do that. The book on Messier, he's done some Hockey Canada stuff, and I think Mark has always been wanting to go to the next level, but Mark has never been Jim Playfair. Well, if I can't be a head coach, I'm going to go be a head coach in the American Hockey League, you know, not prepared to do the things that other young coaches do. And I wonder if, you know, he becomes part of the staff, if that's in the cards. I don't know. I haven't read the report, so maybe they've already shot that down.
I like it. I think it's a good
move. I think
Alain
could handle him.
Yeah.
I don't think Alain would be intimidated by Mark Messier.
But you talk about a powerful image, though. I mean, I like the hiring of Vigneault, but I mean, that's Mark Messier, and all of a sudden those rumors start coming out of him. Well, is he just grooming Messier to be a successor? Is he looking over his shoulder? And especially in that town with that organization and Messier being there, I almost wonder if that becomes some, maybe not a distraction, but if that's always kind of in the back of your mind. It's like, well, that's Messier. He's king of the Rangers.
Should we lay all the cards on the table here? Should we be perfectly blunt? Should we step out of character?
Why not?
Everybody, anybody, any situation now you can come up with. That, right? Don't you find nowadays that
we're
always preparing for failure. We have no idea what the Calgary.
But that is that
we
is
have
Mark
no idea
Messier.
What the Calgary Flames are up to.
That would be Lanny McDonald being the assistant coach behind Bob Hartley.
Now magnitude of it is different. But look, as soon as from Medicine Hat and is the Willie Desjardins. As soon as Willie won the American Hockey League Coach of the Year, Gullitson was out, right? That kind of stuff. So it happens everywhere. I mean, we're always preparing for the worst. We're always... So I know what you're saying. It's the magnitude of it. It's Mark Messier. But Alain Vigneault is eventually going to step into that at some point, too. Because even if he doesn't take the job, if he's still around the club, isn't he the de facto replacement?
Yeah, fair enough.
Right?
It just would seem odd seeing him as the assistant.
Exactly.
It would write stories every time there's a struggle. Well, is Messier going to be... Alain Vigneault struggling. Messier's right there. It would certainly...
I think
Larry Brooks would have a field day with it.
He's going to anyway. Well, Brooksy will have a field day with it anyway. What's going on in Philadelphia?
Alain Vigneault is the new head coach of the New York Rangers. We know that. And just a little bit up the road, something big happening in Philly as well.
the Philadelphia Flyers.
As the Flyers have now agreed on terms of a four-year contract with soon-to-be unrestricted free agent Mark Streit. He was acquired by the Flyers from the Islanders last week for a minor league forward and a fourth-round pick in 2014. Usually when you see this happen, I mean, we've seen times like Dan Hamhuis went through two teams before he ended up going to free agency. But in this case, usually when you see a big player dealt prior to him becoming a UFA, you see him get signed. So I don't think there's any surprise that Streit has signed a deal with the Philadelphia Flyers.
Well, it's an amazing deal
for them.
It's an amazing surprise for the Flyers. Aren't the Flyers that? Well, I guess they got Timo Tiiminen, but didn't they acquire Weber's rights and then repackage them to Pittsburgh? Not Weber,
Hamhuis.
Hamhuis.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I was saying. Because they got him from Nashville, and then they're like, we're not going to sign you, so let's go to Pittsburgh. And then Pittsburgh didn't sign him at all either, so he ended up signing with Vancouver.
Okay, so it's just the one example.
Just the one. They got Tiiminen, and now they've got Mark Streit.
So this is where the math wizards come in handy. Now we believe this forces Philadelphia's hand into a compliance buyout, right?
With Bruce Galoff?
Well, with somebody. There was always, because I believe, now with, I don't know how the new tagging works. I know they can go over a little bit, or they could under the old collective bargaining. Have you read the new collective bargaining agreement?
I've read parts of it, but.
Yeah, it's out, by the way. I'm going to print it while I'm here, because I love to print
Can I get you to print it on the other printer so I can make it go back to back?
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I got a whole bunch of stuff I got to print while I'm here. But that's one of the things.
Office supplies.
The general consensus, at least the belief out there, is that the Flyers, to make this happen, they've got Claude Giroux coming up to make all of this happen, that they were going to look at Briere, perhaps. They were going to look at Breeze Galov, you know, his compliance buyouts. And I will caution everybody with this, I hate spending other people's money. And this is real-world money. Like, I mean, these buyouts.
The buyouts are, that's right? Cash.
That's cash.
That's straight two-thirds of a big-ass contract.
Two-thirds for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know, as I'm looking at here, Breeze Galov is beyond 17-18 in terms of being owed $5.6 million plus, right? It's an awful lot of money. Now, the Flyers, you know, Ed Schneider may do it. These are the types of things that we heard from Jay Feaster on Friday. The Flames are not buying out any of their players.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to be paying an awful lot of attention to teams like Philadelphia. And it may not be a bought-out player. But if you already have Kimmo Tiiminen, Tiemannin's a UFA, right? Or did he sign? Am I looking at old or new information?
Tiiminen is a UFA after this season.
After this season.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So he's got a contract for next year?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm reading it wrong then. You got Braden Coburn at 4.5. You've got Mezaros at 4.
Mezaros.
It's east. I don't see them. Where's that Barkov kid from? Is he from Russia? Who took Adam Hall with the first overall pick? Why isn't Todd Marchant in Boston
Steve
playing
Sagan.
Better? I had to laugh. Nick Grossman, $3.5 million. Now you're going to add Mark Streit. There's an awful lot of money tied up in the back end of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I mean, you might be able to, I mean, depending on the future of Chris Pronger, I mean, you can always have the, if he ends up retiring, that's going to save you about $5 million on your cap because he's still signed for the next little bit. So there's the Pronger future, right. And then you also have the buyout.
But the real world reality of having the potential for six defensemen, and what are we looking at for Streit?
We don't know yet. So the money terms have yet to come out. We just know it's a four-year deal. But I would imagine that we're talking upwards of $4 or $5 million.
Is it safe to say that Nick Grossman at $3.5 million a year might be the least expensive defenseman on a six-man unit for the Flyers?
Yeah, and that's a lot of money for Nick Grossman.
That's where the Calgary Flames are looking.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, the rest of the league is looking. It's not a secret.
Yeah.
Those are the types of things that lead people to believe this is going to be an active offseason.
So we will wait and see what the contract terms are on Mark Streit, but to multiple sources now confirm that he has agreed to a four-year deal with the Philadelphia Flyers. That's our look around the National Hockey League. We do it to kick off the 3 o'clock hour every day here on the big show on Sportsnet 960
teams.
The Fan. What was two teams?
That was two teams.
Three teams.
Oh, yeah, we did the final.
We did the four teams.
I slowed
if you really
down.
Want to get
I slowed
technical.
You down.
Now, you get the absolute privilege of being part of this.
What's that?
It's the segment that we have on after around the National
Just
Hockey
around
League.
MMA?
Yeah, it's around MMA. No, close. We go around Major League Baseball.
Oh. The American League, the National League. This is Around Major League Baseball on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And complete with techno music from...
I like the original music he used.
Which was
1, 2, 3 kid stuff.
Yeah, I like that too. But this had sound effects and everything.
Yeah.
I'll whip quickly through.
Toronto Blue Jays.
The Jays are back in action tonight when they take on the Colorado Rockies at the Rogers Center. Jays have won 5 straight, 8 of their last 10.
Oh my!
They try to get back in the playoffs. They're in fuego. Catcher JP Arencibia says pitching's been a big part of the Jays' recent turnaround.
You know, guys are putting together good at bats. Pitching has been the biggest thing, I think. You know, when you come in here and you give up one run, and you shut them out, and you give up a couple runs, today, and could have been easily another shutout.
Are the Jays back?
Yes.
They're making the playoffs?
They're back at home, Pat. Aren't they? Or are they in Colorado?
Still a lot of people, especially in this
area
of the country.
They are back at home.
They are the Rogers Center. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's great, but they're still missing
the
playoffs.
They're fantastic. We all love
I hope they
we
keep
all
it going.
Love the Jays.
I hope they keep it going. Jays coming off a sweep of the Rangers over the weekend. Tonight they take on the Colorado Rockies. Josh Johnson tries to break through. He's on the mound this evening. First pitch, 5:07. Staying in the American League.
New York Yankees.
The Yankees were forced to take slugger Mark Teixeira out of the game on Saturday. Felt some discomfort in his ailing right wrist. Manager Joe Girardi commented on the situation.
He just doesn't feel like he has the snap in his swing, so we're going to take him out and probably give him tomorrow off, and then we got Monday off, and then we'll reevaluate. You know, he just doesn't feel like he has the snap and the strength in it, so we're just going to give him a couple days off and see what it does.
And the Yankees are still uncertain if their slumping first baseman is headed for another stint on the DL or not. An MRI in New York on Sunday morning revealed inflammation, but no tear.
How's A-Rod doing?
Tampa Bay Rays.
The Rays called up Will Myers, their number one prospect, in advance of tomorrow's doubleheader against the Red Sox at Fenway. He'll meet the team in Boston and wear number 9 to make room for Myers on the active roster. Second baseman Ryan Roberts was optioned to AAA Durham. Myers excited for the chance to play in the majors.
It's very exciting. You know, I've been really looking forward to it, and I'm having a good time here. They're very welcoming. I'm looking forward to the rest. Just get ready for the season. I don't want to try to do too much. Just go out and have fun and just get ready for the season.
Myers is hitting .286 with 14 home runs, 13 doubles, 29 walks, and 57 RBIs in 63 games for Durham entering yesterday. He's been even better as of late, hitting .354 with 10 homers, 7 doubles, and 32 RBIs over his last 23 games.
You never answered my question.
Detroit Tigers.
The Tigers and outfielder Torrey Hunter having some nice success as of late. In fact, he hit career home run number 300 on Sunday in the city where his career began.
That's driven in the air to right, left field rather. Back to the track, to the wall, and that ball is gone. It's a home run, and there it is. It is number 300 for Torrey Hunter, who does it here in Minnesota, where his career started.
Hunter played for the Twins between 97 and 2007, hit a 2-run shot to left field in the first inning at Target Field. The Tigers won the game by a 5-2 count.
Oakland Athletics.
And the A's find themselves in top spot in the AL West, thanks in part to using the long ball in their win over the Mariners yesterday.
Donaldson rips one to center and deep. Andy Chavez is going back, and that baby is gone. Smith to right.
Wow.
And that baby is gone. Second deck back to back. And that one's blasted to right. Down the line, and that baby is gone. Another long one. This time it's Moss, and it's 9-2. That one's hit to right center. And that's hit a ton. And that baby's gone. The A's are launching balls out of the Coliseum. Home run number 4 on the afternoon.
That's a lot of home runs.
Tell you that Jonah Hill knows how to pick up players, doesn't he?
He sure does. Jonah Hill, who was actually not...
Can you not...
Peter Brand is not actually a person. Yeah. He was kind of a meshing of 3 or 4 different guys.
Talking Moneyball, the movie that came out a little while ago.
It's about the A's,
right? But I can't watch the A's without looking for Jonah Hill somewhere in the crowd.
A's were also helped by the Jays sweeping the Texas Rangers over the weekend as they lead the AL West now by 3 games.
Jays
as
I look awesome.
Around Major League Baseball, we do it to follow up around the NHL every day. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, more on the restructuring or the rumored restructuring with the Calgary Flames before we get to the top of the hour. Hey, the NHL awards were given away over the weekend as well. Haven't even had an opportunity to chime in on that. Headlines at the top of the hour. This is the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We won't have any compliance buyouts. In terms of, we're anxious to see what other teams do. The period opens 48 hours after the last Stanley Cup playoff game, so it is something that we're anxious to see what some other teams do. Right now, teams that we think may avail themselves of that option, they're still at the point where they'd rather make a trade than tell you that they're going to compliance buyout a player. So, again, we're staying on top of that with other teams.
Talking Calgary Flames hockey in the afternoon. The big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
From Friday, that's Jay Feaster, Flames general manager, who joined the media and then joined us a little bit later on in the program. But asked about compliance buyouts. You got the window. You have the opportunity to do that coming up this summertime. And it gets a player right off your cap. You got to pay him two-thirds of the money he's owed. And we talked about it from the Marc-Andre Fleury side of things. I mean, you're not talking about a ton of dough from NHL standards, but you get that cap hit off. On the Brizgalov side of things, yeah, you got to pay a whole lot more money. Yes, you get rid of the cap hit, but that's a big hunk of cash. And Jay Feaster, the Flames GM, says no compliance buyouts. It's not what they're going to be doing this summer anyway.
I want to go back and revisit the conversation, but I'm not so sure that we went through that whole process, and I think Roger Millions from Sportsnet then revisited it and said, you know, tried to get him cornered into, well, you won't buy any of your players out, but is it possible you might take a player in trade and buy him out? And I believe that door was left open. And I think you have to. I think you have to have all the arrows in your quiver. This is what the Flames have been talking about since the trade deadline. This is what they have been talking about since the end of the season. The moves like today, you sign Mark Streit, the Flyers are motivated to do something. With all of that said, let me play devil's advocate here. Who wants these guys? Like, if you're the Calgary Flames, are you excited about the fact that the Flyers are possibly buying out Brizgalov? Are you excited about the fact that Sean Horkoff is available? Are you excited about the fact that, you know, and back to that whole point about Elliot Friedman, John Shannon, Jay Feaster, Rob Kerr, Pat Steinberg, Dean Moberg, Josh Humphries. We all think there's going to be a lot of moves.
But, you know, and
but what if there isn't?
This is, and I look at it less as, oh, well, look at all these guys who might get bought out. I mean, that's who you're going to... I look at it more as, okay, let's take the Flyers as an example. They just signed Mark Streit, and the Flames aren't buying out any of their own players, but they've got a ton of cap room. Let's say the Flyers run into an issue. They're like, you know what? We don't know if we're going to buy out these guys. And all of a sudden, they need to get the if they want to have Mark Streit in the fold, which they're going to want to. They just signed him,
right.
And they also know that Claude Giroux is going to need to be re-upped after this season.
Right.
Maybe they look at it, and maybe all of a sudden, a player who you wouldn't think usually would be trade bait all of a sudden becomes available, or a player that if he was going to be trade bait was going to cost an arm and a leg to get. Maybe all of a sudden the price goes down a little bit because you are a little bit more desperate to make room. So I'm just throwing, we're using the Flyers as an example because we were talking about them in the last segment. But what if, like, well, wait a second. I mean, Voracek or Simmons, these guys, we like them, and they're important parts of our organ, but that's 4.25 for Voracek. That's 3.975 for Simmons. That could help us in signing a Giroux. That could help us in managing. And all of a sudden, you've got a team like Calgary say, hey, we like this player. And usually you'd say, no chance. Maybe the door's open just a little bit more than it usually would be because of a cap situation you might find yourself in. That's more where I see the value.
Absolutely. And my only caution to all of that is how many teams I hear saying the same thing. Now, the Oilers are different. The Oilers are saying, you know, Craig McTavish came out and on Mark Spector's radio show up in Edmonton, basically said, you know, probably best for Alex Hemsky and for Horkoff to move on. Okay. Now, Hemsky, I see. Horkoff? Who's picking up plus 30s this year?
Yeah.
Your free agent base is all plus 30s. You're the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks have said, well, you know, we still want to be competitive, but we want to get younger. We want to get bigger. Everybody wants the same thing, Pat. Everybody wants the, you know, the big, strong. Now, I mean, that's why Brian Bickle. Do I believe the Calgary Flames are going to be in on Brian Bickle? No, I don't. Because I think the Calgary Flames have learned their lesson. At least, maybe I'm making them out and out of Moyle. I think Brian Bickle's going to be, if he gets to free agency, he's going to be a bidding war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Brian Bickle's going to be Bobby Holik-like, that it'll get silly.
It'll be good for him.
Great
for
him.
Probably won't
great
be,
for him.
There's a chance it might not be as good for the team who ends up winning.
Right, right. And I think you want to stay on the outside of that. You know, we keep hearing, and I said it earlier, you talk to hockey people, and Elliot Friedman said it with Boomer and Peter this morning. There are a lot of teams looking around wanting to reset here. There's a lot of teams that want to, you know, you look at this draft and, you know, the potential to get some good players, you want to reset the button.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of talk, and I think we've seen a few small deals to this point. Very curious to see how the draft goes.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it in the past. You and I have gone to drafts before when, ho, you watch out. You ain't seen nothing yet. You know, all due respect to the Calgary Flames, and this is not intended to be a slight, but this is an observation of last year. Got to get bigger, got to get grittier, got to get stronger. And they watched the first 2 days of free agency pay extraordinary amounts of money to Brandon Prust and to anybody big and anybody who could fight, George Parros, all of those guys. That's what moved in the first 2 days. And if you set yourself at a budget, you know, you probably weren't participating because of the astronomical costs of all
yeah,
of this.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what happens this summer. I'm wondering if it lives up to the billing. I'm wondering if it lives up to the hype. And the other thing I caution with the Calgary Flames, and I've said it twice, I'll say it for the third time. They have things in the cupboard, but there's still room in their cupboard. It's not bare, but so are you going to hastily give up Johnny Gaudreau? You don't know what Johnny, we don't know what Johnny Gaudreau yep. is going to be. Pat Seeloff. Now you have some, Billy Arnold. You're starting to have some guys in there that you go, well, geez, they might play. Now, it brings us to a totally different conversation, and I hope sometime this week we can, you know,
we'll
talk about it.
We'll have plenty of time.
You know, does the fact that you have, you know, a Johnny Gaudreau, does the fact that you have a Sven Berchi who are smallish players but skilled, does that keep you from taking, I believe, Nick Patan? Is it Nick? In
Portland?
Portland,
yeah.
Yeah, 100-plus points. Not a big guy. Right? You know, the one thing that I've been led to believe is there are some in this league who love the fact so much is being made up about big, strong wingers because they feel like teams will overreach to take that and expose better players. If you're the Calgary Flames, you know, are you better off just getting the best available player? And if it means you've got three smallish, high-skilled forwards in your organization, is that such a bad thing? No, because it's an asset, right? Maybe you don't keep one. Maybe you move one.
Yeah,
and I think there's a lot of things that have to play themselves out, Pat.
Well, when it all comes full circle, we go back to the conversation we had about an hour ago, and that is about this whole Brendan Shanahan rumor and the Flames Nation in a fervor because of Brendan Shanahan having dinner with Ken King on Friday. Is he the new president of hockey operations? When's the announcement getting made? How long until Jay Feaster is fired? So on and so forth. All these questions have been out there. All these things have been discussed. But again, it goes back to what you said. Jay Feaster just said that he has re-upped his entire staff.
He's re-upped his anybody who needed an option got the option picked up, right? You know, that's John Weisbrod, the assistant general manager. That's Chris Snow. That's Jamie Pringle. Troy Ward's staying. My guess is if you bring in somebody in, it's probably going to be with the, okay, observe. You know, I don't think it's a heavy hand.
And I would imagine we're not hearing things like we're not using compliance. Like he said that pretty matter of factly and pretty, you know, pretty convincingly. We're not using compliance buyouts. It just from what we're hearing from there, and then all these rumors on the outside. To steal a line from you, something doesn't compute.
No, and I really don't believe that. And you know, I think the Flames know exactly what they're looking for, and I think the Flames have a plan in place to adapt it. Now, I might be 100% wrong. Whoever he may be, they may hire Brendan Shanahan on Wednesday. He may fire everybody Thursday, and you go into the draft blind. But it doesn't seem like that. It doesn't feel like that. Both John Shannon this morning with Boomer and Elliot Friedman with Boomer brought up the same thing. The two names that are out there, and the predominant one is Shanahan, but the other one is Coley Campbell. Neither one of them are coming from a scouting background.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them have spent this winter, you know, watching prospects. What I the other thing I thought of over the winter, or winter, over the weekend was, all due respect, Brendan Shanahan's won cups as a player. Brendan Shanahan hasn't been involved in hockey operations. Feaster's won, Weisbrod's won, Hartley's won. You know, you bring him in Dogman. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. But if it's a popularity contest, if it's just who's the biggest name we can get, bring him in here to appease people, it's a waste of your time, it's a waste of my time, it's a waste of everybody's time.
That's why, and that the word that you use as we wrap up this segment is augment. Because could I see Brendan Shanahan being a part of the Flames organization? Sure I could. But I don't necessarily mean that it's got to be him and nobody else. I think that there's some addition that could be had here and that could continue to happen with this Flames organization.
Well, I hope it does.
And I think it's important as they continue to restructure. I think that at some point a restructure is coming, and doesn't mean that guys are going to lose jobs, but I do think that they'll make some changes sometime in the next few years.
And I know, I believe it was Friedman this morning with Boomer. Great point about where is Craig Conroy fit in all of this? I mean, make no bones about it. They're grooming Craig Conroy.
Well, and we found out a couple of weeks ago that Conroy's going to kind of oversee the hockey side of the Abbotsford Heat operations. Yeah. He's going to kind of take a... From a hockey side, it was John Weisbrod who was kind of chief doing that, and John's kind of divested some of his responsibilities in Abbotsford, and they've now gone to Craig, and he's going to be a whole lot more involved with the day-to-day hockey operations side of the Abbotsford Heat.
Yeah. I asked Jay Feaster, because you're bringing you had Craig Conroy essentially acting as a coach last year. The year before, he was scouting. This last year, he's coaching. Next year, he's going to be kind of a de facto general manager in Abbotsford. You know, do the Flames replace him as a coach? Feaster said no. They don't think they're going to add another coach here. But, I mean, to me, if you're at, you know, add whatever you feel you need to add. I really go back to what Dobigan said when the first salary cap got put in. There is no cap on brain power.
Yeah.
If you can make a team that works well together, if you can structure it so nobody's bumping into each other, the more eyes out there, the more opinions out there, the better. So, you know, you bring in a president of hockey operations or whatever the title's going to be, again, it's to augment. If there's another general manager position in there that you feel you need, augment it. More scouts, whatever you need. You got to make sure you're watching as many players, having as many eyeballs and opinions on those players as possible.
Conflicting reports on the average annual value of the new deal Mark Streit has signed with the Philadelphia Flyers. Little more.
Okay.
Tim Panaccio at CSN Philly has 5.75. Darren Dreger has 5.25. So it sounds like we're talking over $5 million per.
That's an awful lot for that blue line, isn't it?
And a 35-year-old on a 4-year deal making more than $5 million for the next four seasons.
But he's good.
He is good. Don't get me wrong. It's a good hockey player. But he's also 35 years old.
Flyers do it their own way.
They sure do like to do it their own way. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, the NHL awards were handed out over the weekend. We'll get into that. Plenty more on the Flames as the afternoon continues. They'll be the subject of our big story on the Big Show, and headlines is at the top of the hour. You're locked on the Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Pat Steinberg, Rob Kerr along with you. Welcome back. Anything surprise you as the NHL awards were handed out on Friday and Saturday? Anything jump off the page to you as the 2013 awards were handed out?
No, I don't think so. My giggling and gahoffing was based on Twitter prior to and afterwards that, you know, for whatever reason, the media that covers this league just hates everything, and getting up in the morning is a big issue. And, you know, they complain about the awards, you know, not being an awards show in Vegas. They complained last year that it was an awards show in Vegas. They complain, like, it's funny, all the beat writers, when their guy doesn't get it, like, oh, can you believe, you know, whoever, James Reimer only got one vote or whatever, you know. No, nothing shocked me. Sidney Crosby not winning the Hart, not shocking. PK Subban winning the Norris. What was shocking to me is that Francois Beauchemin got more votes than Zdeno Chara.
Yeah, that was odd.
That was it. But, I mean, even that's, we're talking about fourth and fifth. We're not talking about, you know, I felt bad when I was in here with Ryan. We were talking about the nominations were coming out. And, Pat, for me, this year was so difficult because we only saw teams in the West. And it was difficult for me to comment. I've seen them on television, but, you know, I prefer to watch guys live. I thought Ryan Suter was the best defenseman I saw. P.K. Subban clearly had a great year. There wasn't any surprises for me. I'm a little disappointed that, you know, we can't keep all of this stuff under our hat. That, you know, we all work together to bring this game out to everybody. But, man, if I can scoop and get Subban's name out there.
I've never seen that before. You know, and because it was an award show, I think it wasn't an award show. I think it was a little different than other years. But it was like 2 and 3 days prior. It's like, don't be surprised that P.K. Subban is your Norris Trophy winner.
Even the day of and things like that. It just getting it out first and being first seems to trump all of this.
It's like the NFL draft. I don't know if you are a big watcher of it, but you know, NFL Network does it. ESPN does it. They have their insider, right? So they'll have so NFL Network's got the panel. So they've got what's his face? No, and the best guy in the world, the guy
Schefter.
The lead man on NFL Network.
Rich Eisen.
Rich Eisen. Yeah. And so they've got Eisen, and they've got Dion, and they've got Irving, and they've got the entire Mayock. They've got the entire crew, and ESPN does the same thing with Berman and Mel Kiper Jr. and all. They've got their crews, so they're sitting there, and they're doing it. They're like, okay, and the Tennessee Titans are on the clock. Let's go down to Adam Schefter. Yeah, they're going to pick Steve Johnson. Okay, let's go to the podium. The Tennessee Titans pick Steve Johnson. Say, well, did you need to get it out 15 seconds before?
At some point, I think there's a kickback to that. I think at some point we'll learn how to control all this stuff and get back to, you know what, for the sake of everybody. Look, I'm the same guy that, you know, we went through the whole Lance Armstrong winning Tour de France's around here and people calling and getting mad at Joe Sports because he was telling people. And they said, oh, I was VCRing it at home. You know, I understand people watching, you know, World Junior games and recording PVRing them and Boomer talking about the scores. Oh, you guys shouldn't give out the scores. But when it comes to awards and stuff like that, I don't think, yes, you've got 500,000 followers and yes, you're the biggest insider in all of hockey. You really need to lower yourself to kind of letting the cat out of the bag on award winners? I don't think so. Do you? Am I wrong on that?
I thought it was a little odd myself as well. Certainly, odd is the best word I can
use. The amount of people coming out going, well, this is stupid. Yes, but so was the fact we had a lockout and only a 48-game season, and the fact that the draft could take place 4 days after. This whole thing is just asinine. So let's not bitch about this. It was set up a long time ago and everything. It's just I'm getting to the point now where, you know, I'm so done with the people that cover this league.
Get off my lawn.
Oh. It's just, I'm mad about everything. I'm mad about officiating. Well, what are you going to do about it? No, I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm just going to be mad about it. Oh, I'm mad about the fact that, you know, it's on NBC. Oh, what are you going to do about it? I'm not going to do nothing about it. As I'm complaining for the sake of complaining.
The awards themselves, I thought Alexander Ovechkin was the right choice. Right. I thought that what he did and the way he played in the final, I don't know, half of the season, three quarters of the season, whatever, in putting the Capitals on his back and having that finish he did, it wouldn't be in the playoffs without him. And
I agree.
And that to me is the Mark of the Hart Trophy, you know, the most valuable player to your team. And I think it showed. With him playing well and without him playing well, pretty stark results as to what happens when he's good and when he's bad.
Maybe the one that was the most controversial, and again, I'm talking about the whiny cry people, is Sergei Bobrovsky. Because his team didn't make the postseason.
Right.
And not only that, you look at the points, and he doubled Henrik Lundqvist in second place. And I know there were some people in New York, what a joke. We had, while you were away, a couple of times ago, whenever I was in with Ryan, they announced the nominees, and we had San Jose,
Drew Remenda
on, and he was talking to Ryan, and wow, how can Bobrovsky be? He didn't even get his team. It's Antti Niemi. You know what? Bobrovsky's the first Russian to ever win the award, and I'm here to tell you, that's one guy I did see. He was really good.
I don't know if you've seen his numbers, but they're ridiculous. And I know it's a shortened season, and that's going to skew it a little bit.
And that might screw up the Blue Jackets a little bit because I think it gives them a false sense of what they're all about. I mean, they're not a great offensive team. They got some contributions at the end there. But Sergei Bobrovsky, he was the Mika Kiprusoff, right? He was the engine that drove that bus. He got them as close as he did.
Mm-hmm.
He was terrific, and I think should have won the Vezina Trophy. But it was funny to listen to the catwalling over that, too. The GM of the year, just the timing of it. You know, Shiro did a lot. I mean, you lose Sidney Crosby, you keep your team afloat. He did a lot, but I thought that was just the timing of it was kind of that he's out and, you know, that his trade seemed to backfire.
Yeah.
Boston's trade seemed to. And the other one I like is the Walrus.
Paul
McClain winning coach of the year.
That was about as slam dunk a winner. I would have been absolutely shocked that anybody else won that award.
You know what shocked me about that, though? When they do the voting, right? They show you the voting.
They show you who gets the first place votes.
Mike Babcock with only 7 votes. Only 2 second place and a third place vote.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mike Babcock did his best coaching job this year. I would have put him ahead of a bunch of, you know, people that he you know, was a runner-up to by a mile. The fact that Daryl Sutter got a vote is also funny to me. Hey, we got 1 third-place vote, Daryl.
Good.
We'll show him.
Subban wins the Norris. That was of the 3 nominees. I thought he was the guy. I love Bobrovsky getting the
better
Vezina.
Than Suter, eh?
Yeah, I mean, Suter had some good numbers, but man, did he struggle at times this year. And we saw Minnesota.
Ryan Suter?
Yeah, I saw Minnesota up close and personal 3 times, yeah. And I thought, holy cow, there are some times when he struggled.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
I didn't think. As a matter of fact, I and it's funny. This is this,
maybe and maybe this it was the 3 times I saw him playing.
But you know what, Pat? This is kind of the reason these things are always such an argument. Is it is you know, eye of the beholder. You know, I thought at the beginning of the year that Suter was going to be exposed as being, you know, Shea Weber's guy, that he needed Shea Weber. To me, it almost became the other thing. Shea Weber had a slow start in Nashville.
Yes, he did.
Suter jumped out. I think Suter was hurt towards the end of the year. He played a ton of minutes for him. He played with Jonas Brodin all year. He played with a 19-year-old rookie. I thought he was fantastic. I thought he was much better than I even saw him at his height in Nashville. I thought he had that kind of season. But with respect, that's my eyes. You watch it, you go, he struggled. I get that. I understand. It's the same people. Well, you know, how can you pick Bobrovsky? I saw Bobrovsky steal.
You love him.
I
yeah.
love him. Loved what he get.
Up in arms, though, that Jonathan Toews won the Selke Trophy.
You are, eh?
Not really.
You want to slow the program down and get into that? Or?
No, it just goes right into my man crush on Patrice Bergeron. So the fact that Patrice Bergeron didn't win the Hart Trophy and the Vezina Trophy, I'm up in arms about all of it.
And the Jack Adams.
And the Jack Adams.
He didn't win GM of the Year.
Just, I mean, give your heads a shake. That's what I'll be angry tweeting about later on today.
The only adjustment, you know, they're discussion point, they're an argument point, whatever. They're good for guys' morale. The one thing is I do wonder if the NHL needs to expand beyond regular season awards. We have the Conn Smythe, but is there, you know, a point in recognizing the top goalie, the top defenseman, the top forward of the Stanley Cup final? Should there be recognition for a top coach? Should, you know, coaching, because off the top of my head, I think Quinville was in the Jack Adams finalist, right?
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it takes anything away from the job that Todd